Hello and welcome to Binge or Cringe. My name is Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Cravens.
And we are going to tell you what we've watched on TV, because that's so much.
So much.
So much. One of my sisters said, well, I finally cut the cord. Now, what is it that you watch? And it's like, I got a podcast about it, because really, there's so much.
I mean, unless like you have just got to have like the current like whatever sport that you're into, or the nightly news, like, and this is no disrespect to like networks or anything like that, like it's just, it almost isn't necessary.
Right. Oh, Hulu is doing a live thing now. I think it's available in our area. I'm not 100% sure, but Hulu has now four different tiers. You have, I want to say, let's say it's $7.99-ish to just have Hulu.
I mean, even YouTube,
yeah,
like, wants a piece of, like, I watched Cobra Kai the other day, mm-hmm, like, in its entirety.
Nice.
Delightful.
So Hulu you can get with very brief commercials, but yet enough to irritate me. And then for like $2
more. What amount of commercials, Jane, would not like irritate? Like,
if we were in the commercials.
I've heard you complain about like product placement within the film. It's like brings no mention of it, but they're just like, hold on while I sip this crisp, refreshing. And those people like, get off it, Coke. Pepsi.
Oh, man. I forget what movie I was watching where it just, every single car was a Lexus. And it's like, I love Alexis, but it was really in your face to my mind. It's like, seriously, not the good guys and the bad guys. They're not all going to be Lexi driven, you know?
It's kind of like the Transformers movies and Chevys. Like,
yeah.
They were just, I want to know how deep, like, that Chevrolet was in bed with Paramount, because, I mean, it was just everywhere. By the end of the third film, I was just like, Chevy saves the world.
That's right.
Good job, Chevy. I must buy.
Though I tell you, M&M's, not that it really cost them, but I do want the taste of peanut butter in my mouth when I watch E.T. I do. So, because it was Hulu, so you have the commercial, no commercial. And now they're starting a live thing, just like regular TV, and it shows you, you can watch your CBS, NBC, ABC affiliates live. That's $40 a month with limited commercials, and, well, $39.99. Then I think it's either $45 or $49 with no commercials to watch something live.
Or if you want to add, you've also got, like, an additional amount, like, if you want to add, like, Showtime, Cinemax, HBO,
right,
whatever.
Yeah, I only add those when it's free for, like, a month. And
I keep HBO Go always, just because, like, I'm never not in. Like, even their shows that aren't as good as, like, say, a Game of Thrones or a Silicon Valley,
mm-hmm,
they're at least engaging enough that I'm like, you got me for eight.
Mm-hmm.
You got me for eight episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we're going to go all over with some binging because this, when my oldest first saw it, she was sucked in immediately. Now, it is called Merlin. And it was originally shown on the BBC.
M-E-H?
Merlin.
Is it a retelling of the Arthurian legend in a high school?
Almost.
Who's a man? Merlin.
Now, with this Merlin.
Hold on. I have to text someone about that. Like, that is too good not to be on the Disney Channel, I'm going to say.
Well, John Hurt is the voice of the, at the end of all of it, he goes, Merlin. And he's the voice of the dragon.
He has a fantastic growl.
Yeah, he really does. Merlin. So Adam and I could have a separate podcast all about the Arthurian legend. This is not going to follow it exactly, but you do have Arthur. You do, for instance, Guinevere starts out as a handmaiden to Morgana, who starts out nice.
I am not a slave to translation. Like, even like when people lost their mind whenever they were doing like the Harry Potter books.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd be like, well, you decided not to include this part of chapter 7. You deleted that paragraph and did not cover this about Clove.
Yeah,
I just, they're different mediums. Like, what works in a book, or right. like whatever your genesis was does not necessarily translate to being a radio play or a video game or a movie or a television series. If you've got to adapt some of this, and for something like the Arthurian legend or any play by Shakespeare that has been translated and retranslated mm-hmm. and like revamped and recalibrated, whatever, I'm okay with it. Like, as long as you keep the general thrust of the characters and to a certain degree, like whatever they were initially trying to communicate, I will take a reinterpretation.
First, I'm just going to show this to you real quick. Who is that?
I'm not. It looked like
that?
A beetle. And Benedict
who is
Cumberbatch?
That? Like, oh, yes. Benedict Cumberbatch. No.
Okay.
That is Merlin. That's Colin Morgan, who looks, he and Benedict Cumberbatch really need to do some brother thing in a movie because.
Really looked like a beetle whose name I didn't know for a second.
He's so Benedict Cumberbatchian. It's not even funny. And so everyone in Merlin, all the main people are just gorgeous.
Speaking of Benedict Cumberbatch, yes. He is going to be starring in the new Grinch movie coming out this November, I believe.
Yeah, I know. I just.
Listening to the kids pronounce that name is probably as entertaining as that film is going to be. Like, it's he's like, can we see that? Because they know that there's the Grinch with Jim Carrey, there's the cartoon Grinch, and they decided they would like peg this one with him. And they're like, can we see the Bumbersnatch? Like,
oh,
just,
nice.
Oh, like it's just, it's never
that is
right.
Delightful.
But it's real close every time.
I'm nice. Just, so the story is more of a 5-year buddy picture, really. And for those who think of Merlin, you think of like the grizzled old wizard, classic old wizard, and he's helping young Arthur, blah, blah, blah.
Something Richard yes. Harris or a wizened old bearded
yes.
man might play.
Here they're all the same age. However, delightfully so. Because, you see, Arthur doesn't know that Merlin has magic, okay?
Think of it like Dumbledore, if you have
yes.
never heard of the
Well,
Ethereum
he turns
legend.
Into a Dumbledore, which is great. And
turns into an actual.
Yes, an yeah. actual one. And what I loved at the end of this, with the Arthurian legend, and, of course, I couldn't shut myself up. I said, now here, girls, you have the Christ figure of Arthur and the return of Arthur that has been foretold. And it's like, I can hear myself being boring.
You know, I know I keep making jokes about it, but to be fair, Dumbledore was in the Order of Merlin.
Yeah, yeah.
Just saying. Just saying.
So, what I loved this, and this doesn't give anything away, because Arthur, the point of Arthur is wounded and or dies, whatever story you read, and he goes to Avalon, and he will come back when Britain needs him most. So, the whole time, the whole last season, I'm telling Anna Grace, you're ready for this, right? And she's completely torn apart about Arthur. But after they do all that business, the last shot you see is Merlin as the old man Merlin in current day Great Britain.
Waiting.
For. And that was just kind of fun to
because
see that.
They don't necessarily know the.
Right.
Where it's going. It's like for all the people that like didn't read Infinity Gauntlet, and at the end of Infinity War, they're just like, wait, what?
Mm-hmm. Huh? Now, if you have to do a paper on the Arthurian legend, this is not going to help you. You're going to get a lot of stuff wrong.
They're just going to be.
Yeah.
They will question which telling of. The Arthurian, what translation
That's
of,
right.
of the original
this
text?
This is the BBC translation. Giles from Buffy plays Uther, the father of Arthur. And it's just delightful, really. You can see how the budget went up as the show got more and more of a following. Because, again, they're all dreamy, dewy-eyed youths. And when they start getting all the knights around, it's like, Mom, Percival's arms. And it's like, seriously, all of them are in armor, but Percival never has armor on his arms. I don't think that is accurate.
Does he like, is Percival buff?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. He's.
I have not seen it.
It's just everyone else is in full armor. It just struck me one day. They're all armored up, except Percival, who just like has an armored vest and these mammoth arms. So, anyway,
I don't,
it's fun.
If you are doing a paper on the Arthurian legend, I don't recall, and my senior thesis was done on the Arthurian legend, I don't remember them ever mentioning Percival's
arms.
Let's say pythons or pectorals. Like, and like I said, it's been a couple of years.
It's a gun show in season five.
I don't remember. Was that in Once and Future King? Like, maybe it's just been a minute. I need to revisit the text.
So this is just fun, and it certainly is binge worthy. I enjoyed it because I just like British stuff, and I like the story of Arthur. My now 13-year-old was 5 minutes in and completely taken by the whole thing. I mean, completely. And she will yell at the screen, not in a theater, but she'll like, don't do that! Oh, it's killing me. It's just to just hear the constant talking. Sounds bad when I say it out loud, but it's actually very funny to hear do it. So Merlin, it's not absolutely current, definitely binge-worthy, and it's pretty kid-friendly. You know, again, I think under the age of 10, they may or may not. I mean, yeah, there's a dragon or two, but there is also a lot of talking.
It's not like watching, like, Insidious or something. It's not horrifying.
Right, yeah.
Maybe it's intense.
Yes, yes. And she got so annoyed when Guinevere and Arthur finally got together, and we're just talking some mild kissing, and she's like, there was no chemistry in season one, and all of a sudden, boom, she's in love. No, not buying it.
I'm like, but it's Guinevere.
That's what I said. I said, this has to happen. It's Guinevere.
If you don't use Romeo and Juliet, yeah. Like, as your, like, that's one of the other go-tos, okay?
Yeah.
Like,
and
I'd argue a better one.
She was not happy. And it is a diverse cast, and it's fun. It is escapist fare that is well done. And again, a lot of really attractive people. So it's a win-win, really. Just a win-win. And some of it is really funny. I mean, Merlin's relationship with Arthur is very much like Brad Pitt and George Clooney in Ocean's 11. Very much so. It is delightful. Delightful.
I can't argue with that.
So I think that's certainly a binge-worthy thing that is new and different perhaps to you. I went and sought it out because I knew it existed and I'd never seen it. And sometimes you want to control what your kids watch because you just don't want to see another anime because you might stab your eyes out.
When you put it that way, mm-hmm. Yes, I think that was an exceptional choice.
Yeah, I was really happy with that. So what is the latest you have binged?
Speaking of seeking things out, and like I had not, normally I will kind of meticulously research stuff before I get into it. But YouTube had a free trial of Red, mm-hmm. I believe they call it. It was kind of there was an itch I needed to scratch. They were doing a show called Cobra Kai. Like I was into the Karate Kid movies when I was younger. When you are this far removed from something and you're doing a sequel, sometimes you get The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't. And I was a little concerned with that because a lot of sequels that are so far decades removed from their origin point, it's an empty cash grab.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra Kai genuinely surprised me with the quality of the show. Will Smith produced a show about the first four Karate Kid movies that now airs on YouTube, which sounds like a Mad Lib, or it would have 15 years ago.
Okay.
Will Smith, because he purchased part of the rights to it when his son was in the Jackie Chan movie.
Oh, that's right.
When he taught him Kung Fu and, in fact, was not the Karate Kid but the Kung Fu Kid.
That's right.
But again, like Overbrook owns a piece of it. So like I said, I was kind of curious because like I really enjoyed those movies. I went back and I watched them. The first Karate Kid film is a genuinely good movie. Like
yes,
in the same
is.
Way that like Rocky mm-hmm. was a good movie. Karate Kid 2, also another sequel that I think doesn't always get the respect that it deserves. And if I'm remembering right, it actually made more money than Karate Kid did mm-hmm. whenever it was in theaters. Three reminds me a lot of Rocky IV. Like, it's... Rocky is literally an Oscar-nominated film. Mm-hmm. Like, one, I think, for screenplay. Like,
it was nominated for so much.
Yeah. Like, you had a number of things. The original Rocky is just an exceptional movie, much in the same way. Like, the original Karate Kid, I believe Pat Morita, if he did not win for it, I think he was up for Best Supporting mm-hmm. Actor for the Karate Kid.
Yeah, it is a good movie.
But by the time you get to Karate Kid 3, like, there's this guy that he does, like, toxic waste, or, like, he is just this crazed person that seems to do bad things for reasons. Like, I don't remember if they ever, like, kind of discussed any of that. The third one is a fun movie, but I cannot in good conscience say that it is a good movie.
Which one is the girl one?
The one that has
is it
boys,
called
that Boys Don't Cry?
Yeah, what Hillary Swank. Swank.
Yeah,
but is that?
That's the next Karate Kid. And by
the next Karate Kid.
That's the name of the movie.
Okay.
It's not the next Karate Kid movie.
Right.
Well, it is, but that's the movie that did not have Daniel LaRusso in it. And I think the problem they ran into was that he was 22 in mm-hmm. the first Karate Kid.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's see, that movie came out in 84. I want to say next Karate Kid was like 1995 or 1996.
Yeah.
If you're doing that, really, if you do another movie with Daniel LaRusso, he's the Karate Man in that movie.
Unless you're Michael
J.
Fox.
You get too much further, like, he's going to be the Karate Middle-Aged Man. Like, I'm just saying, like, he was old when he was the Karate, and I'm using, like, finger quotes right here.
Kid. Yeah.
That movie,
so what is the story of Cobra Kai?
Daniel LaRusso is now a very successful salesman. He's got several very high...
So he's there?
Yes.
Okay.
He is in the... Yeah.
But why isn't it called the middle-aged karate guy?
Karate 4 or something.
Yeah.
Or Karate Man. Besides the fact that it sounds like a bad DC movie.
At any point, does someone say karate?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But there are like 10 episodes.
All right.
So I could have just been distracted when it ever it happened. Daniel LaRusso now owns a very successful line of... luxury car dealerships. Like, he is the direct opposite of that kid that you met at the very mm-hmm. beginning of The Karate Kid. Like,
yeah, he had nothing.
He was down on his luck. Like, his mom was, like, doing everything she could just to make, like, ends meet. Daniel's on the other side of that now. Like, his kids have iPads. They, like, his 16-year-old daughter has a brand new car. They've got a pool. Like, they live in California. Like, it's just, like, everything's coming up Millhouse.
Can you still do the crane?
I'm getting that. They actually address the crane in a really funny way.
Okay.
Now, the boy in the first one that Johnny Lawrence, the one that is kind of your primary villain in that,
mm-hmm.
Came from money, like very popular kid. Like, he had like, I want to say like a motorcycle in the first one. Like, his parents let him like take these expensive karate classes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, he was what Daniel kind of became at the beginning of that.
Oh.
Now, his stepfather is the only one that's left. I believe it states early on that his mother has passed, and him and his stepfather do not get along.
Mm-hmm.
And his stepfather was the genesis of all that money. So Johnny Lawrence is now very down on his luck. He is doing whatever he can, doing, like, fix-it jobs for, like, houses. I mean, just mm-hmm. whatever this guy can do. So they've almost switched places
mm-hmm.
at that point, and they continue to do it throughout the rest of the series, almost in the way that Johnny Lawrence is reframed in a very, I don't want to say heroic light, but like Johnny Lawrence at one point is made to look more of a hero than Daniel, who almost seems to be taking on a villainous.
Hmm.
And like, it's not black and white in the way that like Karate Kid Part 3 was very black and white on who was good and who was evil. Daniel's daughter is attracted to the boy that Johnny Lawrence, who has reformed the Cobra Kai Dojo, is training.
Mm-hmm.
He is the kid that's kind of like down and out on his luck, like he's being picked on. And Daniel, unbeknownst to him, has hired Johnny Lawrence's biological son, who he has been estranged with his entire life. Like, just hasn't been there behind on, you know, child support payments. Like, he just wasn't involved in his son's life. He is now working at Daniel LaRusso's car dealership, and Daniel has started a relationship with this kid who seems to have nobody. Some of his guys were picking on him there, and he's like, well, Mr. LaRusso, blah, blah, blah. The guys tell him, they're like, listen, you want to get in good with the boss? Like, he's into karate. Like, like, you know, talk to him about it. So Daniel LaRusso begins training Johnny Lawrence's son. Johnny Lawrence is training this boy kind of down and out on his luck, and unbeknownst to any of them is dating Daniel LaRusso's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil, like, everything. There is a tournament featured at one point in it. They bring up the crane kick at one point, and Johnny even tells him, he goes, right. He goes, that was an illegal kick. He goes, I got penalized for sweeping your leg. And he goes, but you did an illegal kick to my face and you won.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, oh.
That was illegal?
He's absolutely right. Like, I mean, it states more or less in the Karate Kid, you can't kick somebody in the face, Jane. Like, and he
went. I don't remember that part.
You say you don't remember that part?
No, that it was illegal.
You don't remember the face to the...
I don't remember that they said it was illegal. Yes, I remember that part.
Was it like, if you can draw that.
Wouldn't
like,
it be funny if I'd forgotten that?
but it draws a lot from that. And like, it would have made a very satisfying, interesting sequel, like in a 2-hour movie. But they kind of get to pull the taffy a little bit, this develop the relationships more. And I never thought that I would find Daniel LaRusso, I would never have thought of him as, like, villainous. But he starts taking on qualities. At one point, like, he goes to Mr. Miyagi's grave and, like, he's asking him what he needs to do here. But if you are fans of the original films, and I'm saying the three, because Next Karate Kid is really not referenced in any way.
Okay.
That I recall. Cobra Kai is actually worth your time, especially if you were a fan of those. The kids watched them with me. There were some occasional bits of language that I wish had not appeared in there. But I don't think anything gets desperately inappropriate.
Mm-hmm.
There were just some words that if I had have known, I probably wouldn't have, like, let some of the younger ones watch it.
Right.
But as a continuation of that story, really, really satisfying. And there's a nice little tag at the very end of the last episode that I'm guessing is the thrust of the next season, that as a fan of those movies and anybody that really understands anything about those films will be very satisfied with.
Oh, excellent. Okay. So I forget that YouTube is a Netflix. YouTube is almost like Fox was when it first showed up.
They don't have the original programming or really even the depth that, like, your Netflix or Hulu has right now. But this was kind of their big dive into it. Like, and if Cobra Kai is any kind of indication of what they can do with an IP, I'll check it out.
Yeah.
And like I said, you can get a free, I want to say it's a free month.
Mm-hmm.
Subscription to Red, like, you can cancel it, like, you don't have to charge, and you can watch this series within that time frame, like, pretty easy. Like, I think I digested it in a week, but again, like, if you are a fan of, like, 80s films in general, and the Karate Kids in particular, well, Karate Kid, but the movies, meaning they're
the Karate Children,
the Karate Chillers,
yes.
it was a lot of fun. Like, I really found myself enjoyment. If you like those characters, like, if you've asked yourself, you know, what is he doing now? Like, this was a good answer to that. And I genuinely found myself, like, maybe it's a little bit of nostalgia, but it is an enjoyable, like, I think it's like 8-10 episodes, something like that.
I just realized there are people who are competitive eaters. We're more like competitive
viewers.
Competitive viewers, because you and I can just go through a lot of stuff. For instance, I like to listen to amusing things when I drive. And when it comes to music, I want to listen to what I want to listen to when I want to listen to it. So lately, I thought, I have to go to Nashville. What am I going to listen to? And I thought, I'll just put a movie on because I thought, oh, that's right. I have unlimited streaming. So almost everywhere I go, I have had The Office playing, which is perfect because I know who is speaking. I don't have to look at it, although...
The Office was never a visual feast.
Right.
Like, I don't remember ever, like, sitting back and saying to the person who was watching it with me, like, the cinematography on this episode is, I mean, it's Kubrickian. I don't know how else to describe. Like, never, I mean, it never went to that level. But, like, they're almost like kind of little radio plays. Because a lot of that, I mean, you get some, like, visual gags.
Yeah, there are.
But, like, oftentimes, because, like, it's done in that documentary style, a lot of it is just talking to the camera.
And you know what? One of my children came in while I was watching it and said, what are you watching with that YouTube blogger style camera going on? I was like, you mean the documentary camera? Then it was the YouTube blogger thing, which shouldn't have annoyed me, and yet it did. So I was aware of The Office when it was out. I had seen some of the British one. Steve Merchant and Ricky Gervais came up with it, was in it, blah, blah, blah. Then they had the American version. Instead of Ricky Gervais, you had Steve Carell.
Who's still also a producer,
yes.
I believe.
And it's... The beauty of it is a lot of these characters are morons, but they're genuine.
Right, and they're... I mean, you want to... Like, Dwight. Dwight is like, I don't think he's necessarily stupid, but like he definitely plays by his own set of rules. Like the drum that is beating in his head is definitely going to a different
beat.
It's
different. And I realized if you just describe Michael Scott, for instance, he sounds like a horrible person. Everything that could be taken as an offensive term or racial slur, for instance,
like he always knows how to
do
the wrong
and then
thing.
He'll go, well, I'll have you do this, Oscar. Oscar is openly gay. He says, I'll have you do the decorations, obviously. But they all know he genuinely doesn't realize how offensive he is. Not that it's an excuse, but it's not that kind of show.
I think the comedy.
The
reason why Michael can get away with that, like Michael is not portrayed as a cultured, intelligent, like wise man. Like Michael's an idiot.
Yes.
And he makes mistakes constantly.
Yes.
Like, and I'm not saying it's ever okay to like pigeonhole somebody
or any of that. Yeah.
But like it's a lot easier to take it if it's coming from an idiot. And it's not like they cover that up on the show.
Yeah,
like,
they all know he's an idiot. Every time Phyllis, something happens to her, he laughs. Phyllis is overweight, and he keeps calling her the oldest person there, and she keeps reminding him they graduated high school together and things like that. Now, the gist of it, other than the fact that he's an idiot, the gist of it, what really touches my soul, is I've worked in offices, like not worked at a business that had an office. I have been... in office situations as a temp, and mind you, this is a long time ago, but I could hear the fluorescent lights just by looking at it.
Yeah.
Those characters are very broadly painted, but they exist. They truly do.
Within the confines of your mind, yeah.
And that's many times. There's one guy, oh man, he bugged me so much. I was temping, and he was the CEO of this company. It meant nothing to me. And I was to type his letters. Well, he was the CEO. He could not form a sentence. And so what did I do, Adam?
Formed his sentences for him?
Oh, no. I typed it exactly the way he gave it to me.
What were we saying earlier, Jane? Youth is doing whatever you want, whenever you want, like... Like seasoning and age and wisdom is knowing when you should or should not do something.
I did it so often just to annoy him. I don't know why. But In that, there is the character of Jim and
Halpert.
Yes, Jim Halpert, who clearly is very smart, very educated. He's taken a job because it pays him money. He stays.
Not backbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He stays because he enjoys the people.
And in particular, Miss Beasley.
Yes, he does enjoy Pam, but what they do to their coworker on a regular basis is so funny. I mean, I've had those conversations. I have a Christmas present for you. What is it? Well, I've been sending Dwight letters from the CIA. Now he's going to have a rooftop meet with their helicopter. Let's watch. You know, stuff like that.
The relationship between him and Dwight is... it's delightful.
It's
like the comedic version of... what are the characters' name from Les Miserables?
Jean Valjean and the other guy.
Yeah, that's what it is. Except it's like the comedy, like it's the police officer that wants to like catch this guy that all he did was like steal a little bit of bread.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and like him, and it's not because like Dwight killed like his family. Like it's not like this just Herculean. No, like I think maybe one of them like put their stapler in Jell-O once, and like it just flew on from there. Like,
yeah, pretty much.
It is the source of so much just delicious, delicious comedy.
There was a bat, and Jim Halpert decided to try to get Dwight to think that he had turned into a vampire just by saying things.
Yes.
Yes, like, her crucifix is so blinding. Can we turn the shades? Can we just little things like that?
Another thing that impressed me about that series is Steve Carell ends up leaving, I want to say, around season 6 or season 7. Is that right?
I don't know.
I don't remember exactly. I know he did it pretty late in the series' life, but it continued, I want to say, another 3 or 4 seasons after Steve Carell left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of times those can signal like the death knells for certain shows. Like, for as much love as everyone wants to give the Andy Griffith Show, like, I really don't find it that watchable after Don Knotts.
Yeah, the ones in
leaves.
Color are horrible.
Like, I mean, yeah, that you've got that. That's its jump the shark point for it right there. And I was concerned genuinely that whenever Carell left the show, like, that is he the glue that is holding
9 seasons?
Is he the glue that was holding all of that together? Like, what was it? It didn't. Like, you had Ed Helms, like, really kind of stepping up. Mm-hmm. You had, like, Dwight's character.
Oh,
like,
and Kimmy Schmidt, that actress, she comes into it as well.
Yeah, whenever Pam takes a sales job, like, she ends up becoming the receptionist there. Like, it filled it intelligently, and I think part of it may have something to do with the fact that a lot of the stars and, the stars, producers, and the writers are all the same people.
Yeah.
Most of the people in that show are also comedy, either like they're doing stand-up or they're comedy writers themselves. B.J. Novak was one of the...
B.J. Novak and John Krasinski went to high school together.
The two of them write a tremendous amount. I think both of them directed a couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not just actors portraying the characters. Like, they have their hands like in the dough, like they're kneading it and making the bread in addition to being these characters, which is why I think a lot of that material feels so well tailored to those individuals, because they're writing it. They know their strengths. They know their weaknesses, or in some cases they know someone else's strength or someone else's weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And the comedy on that show just seems to be coming from a genuine like place. It doesn't feel forced.
No, not at all. And it's a thing of beauty to have Angela refer to Pam as the office's mattress, and how can she dress so provocatively when Pam wears a button-up shirt and
I mean she's about as conservative as,
but to Angela, it's funny.
It would almost take its own podcast, its own separate podcast.
Yeah, I could do one for every episode.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
You, I mean, honestly,
maybe
you can analyze every episode of The Office.
I would love that.
Episode by single episode. Like, it's just, it's a really engaging, offbeat, like, it's done in a documentary style. It's not your traditional three-camera setup. Like, it's not the same, the way that, like, Friends or Seinfeld was shot. And the first time I saw it, it was a bit jarring, especially if you are used to the traditional, you know, I Love Lucy or your traditional sitcom setup.
And what's delightful is they never explain why there's a camera crew with these people.
I think maybe they try to in the very last season.
Oh, okay.
They actually do. But, like, for a majority of the series run, like, there's no – they're not even calling to attention that they're being recorded or that they'll do fourth wall breaks, turn to the camera, kind of stare at it.
Yeah. There's just a lot of funny going on. And again, it's a place I like to visit. It amuses me, and it just tickles me way deep down inside. It's just, the whole thing about it is beautifully done.
It's the equivalent of comfort food. Like, you can just, like, if you're one of those people that needs to fall asleep with something on in the background, like, my girlfriend, like, she loves to fall asleep with The Office on in the background. She also loves to fall asleep to shows about murder. Like, analyzing murder. Like, I'll go to sleep, and then, like, I'll wake up, and suddenly I'll hear, and they had killed 14 people and stuffed all of the bodies below the floorboards. Find out how. And I'm just like, oh my goodness. What? This is seeping into my dreams.
Kind of like that vacuum. Oddly enough, Anna Grace will just randomly say, hey, Mom, can you tell me some more stuff about serial killers? Like, where did that come from?
We need to get her and Kristen together. Like, I don't know if, like, she's a junior sleuth, like, in the way that, like, the Scooby Gang is. Like, and when I'm not there, like, she'll get someone to watch the kids and solve crime. Like, maybe she's like Murder, She Wrote. Like, I don't know. Because I'm obviously not there when she's doing it.
Exactly.
But I think she wants to solve crimes.
Do you actually know who did Jack the Ripper? Are you aware of that? I want to hear your theories on Jack the Ripper, which is weird because I find that whole Jack the Ripper thing fascinating. But to have my oldest child start questioning me about serial killers, this was my response. Are you ready? I said, well, John Wayne Gacy was a clown. She goes, that's why I hate them. And I said, and Dahmer ate people. And he was killed in prison. Well, he deserved that. And then I said, and Son of Sam, he was a handsome man and got away with a lot. You can't trust him.
There is actually a Batman story set in that time period where Batman has to contend with Jack the Ripper.
Really?
Like, it's fascinating. It's called Gotham by Gaslight, if I'm remembering
correctly. Yeah, Jack the Ripper, that is fascinating.
And Batman's fighting him.
Ooh.
It makes me want to revisit it.
Ooh.
It's just it's a lot of fun.
She was thrilled that she could tell me about some serial killer I'd never heard of from like 300 years ago. You've never heard of him either.
Kids like to educate their, like, okay, the way I had to put it to somebody, it's like stealing the ball from Michael Jordan. If I can do that once, like, I've done something. It doesn't matter, like, how many, like, three-pointers this man has sunk. Like, if I can catch him for a second when he is not paying attention, and I steal the ball from Michael Jordan. Now, I didn't have a career, like, a multi-year spanning career where, like, I was just putting up, like, MVPs and championships. Mm-hmm. No, I can have a claim to fame because he's that good. Parents are the ones that educate you with all that stuff. And if you can catch them in a moment of weakness, or maybe they're tired, or maybe they just woke up, and you can educate them, well, you've stolen the ball from Michael Jordan.
That's for sure. She was going on and on about how she knows all these musicals because she told me about Hamilton first. I said, you know why you like musicals? Me. Not only did I make you, I brainwashed you to like musicals. I did this.
I created this.
Yes, I did this. And she always ends with, but I told you about Hamilton.
I am Dr. Frankenstein.
That's Frankenstein. Yeah. Luca.
It's fine.
Watch the Office and watch the British one too, or as I do it, listen to it. And I'm going to throw one more in here because binge or cringe, there's so much to choose from. Have you ever seen any of the Queer Eye for a Straight Guy?
I have not. No. I am aware of it.
All right. There was an original show. I don't know. It seems like yesterday, but I'll say it was 5 to 10 or 12 years ago.
I found that my ready recollection of the actual time period that things happened is slowly but surely becoming less and less accurate.
Yes, but I can name almost every film from 1939. That's what's important.
Well, and I can tell you almost every episode, the name of the episode, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Yeah, see?
Does this give me money? Does this give me wealth?
No.
No, it gives me none of these things. Or respect? No. Also
from
not
me.
That.
From me.
There's
that. Anyway, so there was this original group of Queer Eye, and the point is it's a makeover thing, and it's what was great about it is some people you see makeover shows, and it's clearly the person they're making over is not comfortable with anything they've done, even though they might look 100% better. But it's not like that. They have guys that represent your lifestyle, cooking, and of course, for crying out loud, do something with your hair, that kind of thing. And what the original members of Queer Eye for the Straight Guy say is they kind of made them as a unit more, they brought them into a living room.
Right.
And so that certainly helped with biases and so on and so forth. And it was just a super fun show.
Yeah.
And I love Carson Kressley, and I still do. Now, they had a reboot. Season 2 is now up on Netflix. There is season 1 as well. And now they're doing the same thing, but even, for instance, one of the guys says, he's talking about a jacket he found in someone's closet, a jacket from a guy they're making over who is, I think, 20 years old, who happens to be straight, and this beautiful man says, "I'm a gay man. And that's the gayest piece of clothing I've ever seen." And there's a lot of funny like that. And you can tell there's a lot of education going on with this. But not that it's preachy or anything. But one of the guys, he was adopted. He was very, very much involved in his church. When he came out, they all turned against him. And he has got a real problem with anything
got
like
a
that.
To pick.
Yes, which is perfectly understandable because apparently he didn't just attend a church. You know, you can go to church, then you can be really involved in your church. And he
was immersed.
He was immersed, and he was Southern, and just he still is Southern. So it's a.
I was about to say, I don't think you can.
No, you can't change that.
You can't change that.
Anyway, so you get things like that happening, and it is very, very revealing. So you've got two of the guys who are married. One of them has kids, and they're
three-dimensional.
Yes,
like they're not cardboard cutouts.
Correct, and they're fun. They're just fun to be around, and they make over people and their spaces within their comfort zone. They present. We want to get to know who do you need to cook for? Are you just cooking for yourself? Do you have a lot of guests? Well, we're gonna show you how to make something just for when your friends come over that you can actually do. It's not one of these insane things where like you're never going to do that again. And it's my kids want them to come over to our house so bad. I made the mistake of saying they live in Atlanta. It's my fault. And I said, you know, we have the ability to make over our own. I know we can do it, but they're so fun. And it's nice. It is a fun show. And you do learn some stuff.
To be fair, I could make my own superhero outfit, but I would much rather Edna did it from The Incredibles.
Oh, of course. I didn't know that when you tucked the front part of your button-up or T-shirt in the front of your jeans but had the rest of it out, that it was called a French tuck. I thought you just forgot to tuck in the rest of it.
I didn't even know that.
That's a thing.
There's so many. I'm going to have to dissect which part of it I need to cover first that I didn't know.
Yeah. It's a thing. And so you pick up little stuff like that. Here's something. It was so obviously brilliant. They redid someone's space. They had a bunch of kids. You should watch that one. And they said, your living room is kind of small, so all we do is move your furniture around, but we put in a glass coffee table because when it's a small room, if your coffee table is glass, it doesn't look as small. It's like, oh, that makes so much sense. Why didn't I think of that? Why am I not on this show?
Yeah, you know what else happens to glass tables?
Yeah, they get broken.
Yes.
Yeah. And plus, they're constantly...
I need iron and stone. Yeah. I need it to sound like it came out of Game of Thrones.
By the way, have your children broken almost every dish and glass you have?
Children are made to spend your money and break your things. Like, they're remarkable. They're beautiful. Like, I treasure them. But, like... if you don't have kids, they will inevitably, like, do that.
I told them that one day. They said, what is it like to be a mom and have kids? I said, well, imagine all of your stuff broken. And you've had kids.
Like, that's really, like, it's, Kristen and I were having a discussion the other day. And, like, she's like, hey, where is this? And I go, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. If I need something on a consistent basis, I will hide it from everyone in the house. I go, mm-hmm. I have a pair of scissors that only I know the location of. Because if the kids get to it and they're like cutting out, you know, construction paper or they're making crafts, I'll never see it again.
That's right.
I have a towel. Like, it irritates me when I don't have a towel. In the bathroom, like when I get out of the shower or the bath or whatever, I need a towel. They will take them. They will put them in their room. Like, they will throw them just anywhere but where it is. Like, I have a towel that is dictated as my, I can't hide the towel, but like I have very firmly specified whose towel that is. And I'm not a tremendously possessive person, Jane, but when I get out of the shower,
you want a towel.
I need to be dry.
Now, I made a huge discovery why I did not think of this many years ago. Well, I guess they weren't as tall and I didn't need to. But if you have a thing, a buckety type thing where you keep all of your cleaning supplies, put the candy you want to conceal in there. Because no child is going to go and take that bucket of cleaning supplies to clean.
My dad used to hide like Twinkies and Ho-Hos, and just all manner of Little Debbie.
Oh, goodness.
And so on and so forth. Like, any of the snacks that fall under that category. I found them once, like, underneath his bed. And as a child, I'm just like, I'm like, why would he hide this from us? Like, I am his son. Why would he? And as an adult, like, there's a shelf that is so high that only I can reach it. Without assistance.
Now.
I put like my Peter Pan, like honey roasted crunchy peanut butter up there in this huge jar, my bacon bits, the peanuts that I like to put on top of like the low sugar whipped cream, like that I get it. It's all this stuff. Like just if I need something to eat, like I want it to be there. And if I put it in the refrigerator, if I leave it on access, like
it's gone.
It doesn't matter. Like if I had 16 cans of Vienna sausages and I leave them out, there will be precisely 16 cans of Vienna sausages gone. And like that ain't even the good meat. Like I ain't talking about like I don't is there a nice Vienna sausage? Like,
no.
The name makes it sound. You're just like, oh, Vienna. No. Vienna, it's like the bologna of the canned meats.
Yeah.
Unless you get
sure
to.
Is. So, yeah. Jim does the same thing. He's very bad at hiding his stash. You see, Jim eats constantly, and he can eat anything and not have it show up on his body in a very annoying fashion. And so he has a stash of potato chips because he has the ability to eat a handful and then stop and then expect there to still be some an hour or two later. Now, the foolish thing is he has not made an attempt to hide. He has placed it on a surface on his side of the bed.
You can't.
The girls have identified this and say, why does Dad have all the good food, and just mock him openly and eat it? I said, you know he's counted those mini donuts that don't even taste good. You know he's counted. I don't care. Don't eat that one. Just like, so, again, Queer Eye does address that. They said that even when you have kids, you have to have your own chill-out space. For me, that was the bathroom. I would just go in there and stand and, like, look out the window, and these little hands would come shoving under the door. Like, what are you doing in there?
Like the aliens and yeah, Signs.
Pretty much. It's like,
again, and like I said, I know these stories don't sound, I don't know, like that they're coming from a place of, I don't know, love or like
tolerance.
But
yeah.
Like, I mean, when you are that heavily involved in someone's life, and I mean, literally every aspect of their life, you are a part of, like from very early on, like you have to teach them to use the restroom, like you have to change their diapers, you have to teach them to bathe themselves, like proper etiquette for when you're eating, when you're not at the house, like being in, like all of these things, what is considered decent to dress. And when you are that involved in another individual's life, like it is inevitable, like that something will go awry or
and often the
communication will be somehow lost in translation.
Which is why I love when we can find stuff to binge together that is not annoying.
It's, you want those positive, like getting to take the kids to the theater to see like the newest Disney or Pixar movie, something that all of us can enjoy, that a memory mm-hmm. that we can look back on.
That's right.
And it's not like, you know, do you remember the time you clogged the toilet and then shot me in the butt with a Nerf gun? Like, I mean, it just,
I only have one memory of my entire family going to a movie theater from the age of, I don't know, 9 on up, the whole family? No, I mean, I don't recall my mom ever going to a movie except that one time. Now, maybe we went more than once before I was 9. I don't know, but I don't have those memories.
I think I've overcompensated for the fact. Like, yeah. You know that I am a cinephile. Yeah. Like, I just love movies, and maybe it was because I didn't have ready access to it when I was a kid, and I wanted it. I was like Belle and Beauty and the Beast with books.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I didn't have access like to a library, and I wanted, like, when I'd go over to my friends' houses, like I would, if I knew that they had like HBO or Cinemax, and I knew, like, I would look at what was playing on the channel that they had. I'd just be like, 1989's Batman is on when I'm going to be over at Birdwell's house.
Oh.
I'm going to go over there. I'm going to set it to tape it on their VCR. So I will now have that movie. Or I'd call my uncle and I'd be like, Uncle Rob, they're showing the Terminator film on TNT. Like, we don't have, can you record that
mm-hmm.
For me? And whenever, and like, then when I would get it, like, I would hook two VCRs up together and I would edit out the commercials because I don't want that.
No,
and I'm not going
does.
To fast forward through it either.
No.
Like that.
At that time, when you were doing that, in your wildest dreams, could you have imagined that one day you would be able to have access to every song, every movie, just anywhere you are?
It would have been very steampunk. Like, my brain doesn't necessarily, like, I have to have like a needle to thread through, and like, I don't know that I necessarily like can predict the future. And whenever I do, like, even when I see the future, like now, it looks like 1987 because of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Oh yeah, of course.
Like, I could have like done that, but it would have been through, like I said, through the eye of something else. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the way my brain. I think I like retro things. It's probably why I like Westworld so much. Like, it's a Western with real heavy sci-fi elements.
Ooh, that is cool.
Yeah.
It fascinates me how we've changed how we consume media. For instance, I was annoyed. We have CBS All Access, which I usually only get for Star Trek.
All right.
Which, by the way, you should get CBS All Access to watch Star Trek. We'll discuss that later.
I already have.
But we can. Yeah. And then I just let it go for a while. And I renewed it for a month so my child could watch the Tonys, because apparently that was the only way we could do it. Anyway, so that means we could catch up on Elementary, which we usually watch by going to CBS.com.
The 72nd
reinterpretation
of Sherlock Holmes.
So in watching all this, there was a point to what I was going to say. It's so agitating to have to pay for CBS All Access and then still have the commercials. Makes me crazy.
If I'm gonna drop a dime, like Fox Now, like as long as you have got the cable subscription or direct subscription or however you've got it, like you can stream that like ad nauseum. Like I don't CBS All Access. I think you only have the option to do it by paying for that service by
Precisely.
Itself. It's not something you get an addendum to
right.
like that. If I'm gonna give it, because it's what $5.99,
yeah,
something $5.99. Like that. If I'm going to throw that at you, like, I don't want to see that.
No, I don't. I've seen the same crash test dummy commercial.
And it's always like the same three commercials.
Yes.
When I would watch Hulu, when you couldn't like cast it to things and it wasn't on like phones, you could only do it on the computer, and I'd watch Fringe. Like, I would get so tired of those same three commercials that I would have to watch. And you can't fast forward through
no.
them. You can't skip them.
Awful. Oh, this is my point. With Elementary on CBS All Access, I want to see the entire season when I want to see it. I can stay up 5 or 6 more hours. Oh, but you're only going to put it out once a week.
It's you're using the futuristic model of like the streaming service, but you still want to be beholden to your traditional network, like mm-hmm. of, you know, on Mondays, this will drop, or on Tuesday, this will drop at 8 o'clock, or
yeah,
whenever your show comes
It bugs out. Me. I want to know that it's all right there for me to watch the whole thing. I don't want to wait.
I think it's funny that that's just how, like, when Star Trek Discovery came out, like, in my brain, and I probably even read that it wasn't going to be like that.
Yeah,
in my head, as soon as it hit, I'm just like, I'm going to watch it all, and it's like, next week, and I'm like, next week?
Yeah.
What are you? Is this
I
a
know.
Callback to like the past?
Ticked me
are
off.
You going retro this week? Next week?
Uh huh.
And it was next week. It was
yeah.
not a callback.
Yeah, it was. So when it comes back on, I will make sure CBS All Access is renewed. So yeah, they're not meeting all my demands. By the way, Fringe, certainly worth binging. Queer Eye. Queer Eye, I don't have to watch all of them all at once, but I find it delightful, and sometimes I pick stuff up. It's there in the original Queer Eye. I learned to say zhuzh. You know, when you're rolling up your sleeves, you're just kind of fixing them. You're zhuzhing them. You want to zhuzh your collar a little.
I have never heard or used that word.
You will now. Zhuzh.
This moment was when I learned.
Mm-hmm. Zhuzh. You always got to zhuzh your clothes before you're going out. Just move things a little bit.
I think people are just going to think like I'm slurring my words or something.
And
I'm like, yeah, just zhuzh. And they'll just be like, are you okay? Like,
yeah.
No. Did you?
The Office. Definitely binge-worthy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. Binge-worthy multiple times.
Yep.
And Merlin from the BBC, delightful.
Worthy of your time.
Yeah. Now, for me, out of all of those shows, I cannot get enough of The Office. I want it constantly on.
Even if I've already seen the episode.
Yes, you know, I want it on.
12 times.
I turn it on in the car, turn the phone face down, because oddly, I want to watch.
You don't give yourself that option.
Yeah, not when you're driving.
It's not like, you know, you don't leave birthday cake in the house because you know at some point you're going to wake up in the middle of the night and just be like, you know
yeah,
what?
There's cake.
I don't care if how unhealthy that is for me.
I got to watch it.
I'm going to eat, let's say, a fourth of that sheet cake.
Let them eat cake. So definitely, that's out of all that we've discussed, I'll say The Office is of the highest priority of binge watching.
Of all of them, yes,
yes,
I would agree.
And Cobra Kai on YouTube Red.
I would make sure that, like, it. I don't know that you necessarily have to have seen, like, the other ones, but I don't know that, like, you'll really, really enjoy it as much if you have not experienced it, at least the first two Karate Kids.
Mm-hmm. Or just, no, yeah, you really need to have seen, yeah.
One of them is an Oscar nominated, or at the very least, take 2 hours out of your time, and you're about to commit it to like a 10-episode TV mm-hmm. series. Take 2 hours, pretend it's 4 episodes of the original Karate Kid, and just watch it.
Yeah.
You don't have to watch 2, 3, 4, the remake, the cartoon series. Wow, that was...
That's a lot of
look
information.
At, look, YouTube that. The Karate Kid TV series. I think it premiered the same year as Karate Kid 3.
Didn't even know it existed.
It only ran 13 episodes, but it's a thing.
Oh, it's like me and Manimal.
Kind of, okay. Yeah. But I watched every episode.
All right.
Because I was down with the Karate Kid.
Wow, wax on, wax off. Nice.
Had a theme song. I can sing that theme okay, song to this day. I'm not going to.
Save that.
I'm warning you that I can't.
Save that. We could do a binge or cringe telethon, really. If you kept pumping us full of caffeine, we could keep going.
As long as you just kept feeding us shows, like every so often, like...
We might have to watch something.
Like after a time, it's like the Royal Rumble. After, like, a timer would just come in and Parks and Rec. And I'd just be like, and Parks and
that's
Rec.
That's right.
Like,
we could
that's
do
all
that.
You have to, you just have to wait until we Royal Rumble, binge or cringe. Like, and they just keep feeding us this. Because it's going to be a while before they hit one and it's like, jew. And I'm like, I don't. Neither of us.
Nothing.
We haven't seen that.
We haven't even talked about, Mary Tyler Moore and Newhart and where you can find all that.
The entirety of the Nick at Night.
Uh-huh. Just, we watch a lot of TV.
Mary Tyler Moore is not on Nick at Night anymore.
Is Nick at Night even still on?
I think it's all on TV Land. Nick at Night is like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. It's sitcoms from the 80s and 90s.
Oh, now. But on one of the services, either Hulu, I think it's Hulu, they've got the whole shebang. You just have to go into the Hulu Classic Library. Sometimes you have to look for it.
That sounds like a lot of work.
It is. It is.
My thumb is already dedicated to, I don't know, hashtagging something on Twitter.
Uh-huh. Oh, and how do you feel about the news that the remote control may be on its way out?
Well, I mean, with the advent of most cell phones that can connect to a smart television.
Oh, but yeah, but not even using your phone. Just
that's
speaking
madness.
It. Yeah.
What manner of witchcraft?
That's a thing. Like, they already have the prototypes out, but I yell.
You don't have like a voice to?
Yes, your whole home is smart, and yet I have yelled so many obscenities at Alexa for not being able to answer the simplest
question.
That's
what I'm saying. I don't think the voice translation technology is there yet, because I don't want to have to be like, no. I want to watch Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. That will never come up properly. Anyway, that's a thing. Phasing out remotes.
No.
But it's not going to happen tomorrow.
It'll be the next day.
But it is on. It's just like phones that bend and are as thin as paper. I don't yet see a need. I don't know why I would need that, but it's...
I don't support
that. They keep talking about it. They. Anyway, that's it. Go and watch a lot of television, report back to us, and remember, if you do have unlimited streaming with your phone company, you can turn the phone on, you can play the show, and you can not watch it. Just turn it face down, because the urge to watch it is strong in this one.
Now, I'd argue if it was a ballet or something like that.
Yeah, don't do that.
You're probably not going to get the same.
No, not at all. No. Okay, so thank you so much for listening to Binge or Cringe. I'm Jane Ellen.
And I'm Adam Craven.